Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Talk Spicy. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Thank you for joining me wherever you were joining me. Rate the show, comment, agree, disagree, but whatever you do, keep it spicy. Five-star ratings are appreciated. If you're joining me on the YouTube channel, make sure that you like, make sure that you subscribe. I don't know what you did yesterday, but I watched the women's NCAA girls women's basketball game yesterday. And it just struck me, because as interesting as the game was yesterday, what was almost as equally interesting was watching the responses after the game. But I digress, right? I watched the game yesterday, probably with a few drinks in me, and it was great. It's Sunday. We're relaxing. We're having a good day. But I remember that this game was just supposed to be a culmination. This game was just supposed to be Caitlin Clark becoming the it person everywhere that the it person needed to be. Caitlin Clark was the chosen one. See, one of the biggest mistakes that women's basketball has made and continues to make, by the way, and I don't mind being critical of women's basketball. You know why? Because I watch women's basketball. I cover women's basketball. I care about women's basketball. One of the mistakes that women's basketball continues to make is the same mistake that's made when it comes to comedians. It's the same mistake that's made when it comes to Black actors in Hollywood. There can only be one. Every single time you look up, there is a Black actor who is supposed to be the one. You don't find that with white American counterparts, right? The Black actor that's the one gets in every movie. See, Jonathan Majors was supposed to be the one right now. That's why you see him in every movie. But the truth is there should never be just one. And at the same time that you had Tom Cruise destroying the box office, you had Tom Hanks destroying the box office. There was never just one over there. There were countless amounts of leading men who rocked the box office. And so when you see women's basketball and you go, okay, but Paige Beckers was the one. Paige McBuckets, as they called her. She was the one. And they pushed her and her narrative. And now she's hurt. And so they needed another one. By the way, when Paige McBuckets was doing these things, Caitlin Clark existed. Still getting all of those points. Still scoring a lot. She wasn't pushed. But then when Paige was out of the way, she was pushed. You didn't have multiple women being pushed at the same time. We always know who the player of the year is going to be in women's basketball because that's the one they talk about so much. It's the one that they just keep on talking about. And so this women's NCAA tournament was just a coronation of Beckers. I mean, Clark and her Iowa team that were so resilient that they came all the way from a two seed to defeat big, bad, thuggish, ruggish South Carolina with their thug ball and their gangsters all over the place. And this wholesome, good, good quality, just hardworking, pull yourself up by the bootstraps Iowa team with this superstar who was doing it all by themselves, made people out of their mouth say, oh my gosh, one of the greatest basketball minds of the last 40 years, Dawn Staley, got out-coached. She got out-coached because a girl was hitting 40-footers with a hand in her face, and her team lost by 4 points, two of which was a foul down the stretch when they were trying to win. That's what it made people say. Dawn Staley got out-coached. Right there, I said, they will not beat LSU. Right there, I knew they were not going to beat LSU. Number one, I had it galvanized what I had already known, which is Caitlin Clark doesn't play any defense. We're going to talk about that at some point because Caitlin Clark doesn't play any defense. And then two was when people started saying that she was a talent that we've never seen before, like Kelsey Plum didn't just exist. Like Kelsey Plum wasn't just in college dropping three-pointers from a million miles away. So they went into that game versus LSU, and LSU beat the brakes off of them. I don't care what the score is. If you watch the game, you know. This was LSU beating the brakes off of Iowa, and then Iowa hitting three or four threes in a row to, like, all of a sudden chomp it back down to like 10 and 12 and 8 points, and then LSU beating the brakes off them again because Caitlin Clark can't guard anybody. She's not checking anyone. And so a girl who had 0 points in games had 22. And a girl who averages 10 had 22. And one of the best players in the world went for a double-double. And a freshman who probably drops bars better than she plays basketball had double-digit points. And now we get all of the backlash because the black girl with lashes on, who likes to look pretty and likes to talk her talk, gave Caitlin Clark a little bit of her own medicine. And all you saw was all of the, oh, it was classless. Oh, how could she? Oh, you got to win with class. It's classless. But as it's been said by several other black people and Emmanuel Acho, as it's been said by several other black people and Emmanuel Acho, if you're going to let Caitlin Clark do it, then don't get mad when the sisters do it. But it goes into the narrative because LSU is South Carolina, a team full of sisters, confident, strong, speak their mind. And in that process, we missed out on so many different layers, so many different storylines that we could have seen. I, during the game, was just looking at the players on Iowa, and they had some really interesting stories. But we don't know any of those chicks. All we know is Caitlin Clark. And this isn't Caitlin Clark's fault. I'm not blaming Caitlin Clark. She didn't make white people lose their mind because she could hit a three. She didn't make white people on the internet lose their mind because some other girl looked at her and did the "You Can't See Me" John Cena like she did to other girls. It's not her fault. I like her confidence. I like her bravado. This is nothing to do with her other than the fact that she doesn't play defense. And so now, guess what, America? You have to deal with a bunch of strong, successful, cocky, braggadocious black women who are going to continue to talk that talk. And they do not give a damn what you think. Now, joining me right now my good dude, Emory Hunt, the czar of the playbook. I think the my favorite name for him is Mr. Day 3. I've decided that's my favorite. That's my favorite name, Mr. Day 3. He has dropped a new 2023 NFL draft guide. The czar of the playbook should be named the new name, the czar of the draft guide. Emory, thank you for joining me.
Always a pleasure, man. Glad to jump on in the morning with Talk Spice. I'm a loyal watcher and listener of the show, too. I get mad when I don't see one. Like, man, where Gene at doing the Talk Spicy? It got me through those long weeks of preparing this draft guide. So I'm always glad to be a part of the show.
Yeah, man. And I had to make sure I put my headphones on. I wanted to hear you, like, really well. Because I know, I mean, anytime LSU wins, you know what I'm saying? Even though you are raging Cajun, it still feels good when it's, you know, when it's in the homeland. Is that right?
No, not really. Because it's just, again, it's still raging Cajun all the way through and through. But it is cool to see a team get their first national championship. I remember seeing LSU, you know, I grew up watching LSU baseball constantly win championships. And then seeing the football team win one in my lifetime. There, you know, because they won one back in the 50s, but seeing them win that one in my lifetime was pretty cool to see for the school and for everyone that went. But it's still raging Cajun down all the way through.
No, yeah, obviously you're not about to go out here and start rocking for LSU. I can't lie to you. Like, I just enjoy the fact that when you look at the makeup of that team versus the Iowa team, it was legit two Americas, right? And unfortunately, you know, the magic, her special ability of Caitlin Clark is that she cheated us out of a Soul Bowl. Like, we could have had a Soul Bowl in the championship game with South Carolina and LSU in the thing. It's hilarious too, because when you look at it, you would never think that there were any like white girls on LSU, but once they come off the bench at the end when they're celebrating, all of a sudden you're like, yo, where all these white girls come from? It's like, wait a minute, they have white girls on their team? Because all you see are these just beautiful, strong, athletic, well-spoken, you know, like that have things going on in their life, black women. And then you look over at Iowa and you would immediately think the same thing. You just look at the hue and everything looks similar. And you're like, oh, it's a team full of white girls. And then all of a sudden you notice, oh, no, that point guard, she's not white. Like, that point guard is a sister from Cincinnati. And now that thing started to make a little bit more sense. So that girl that's coming off the bench, you know, she's a freshman, but that's not a white girl, that's a sister. And you see how they've sprinkled in, you know, the flavor, but they, you know, when the iris on the TV puts all of these dark-skinned girls versus all these light-skinned girls, all you see is black and white. And I think it was interesting when you look at the comments that came after the game. I don't think I saw one comment from a black person, at least not a black person I respected, who said that was classless, the way in which LSU comported themselves. But I saw a lot of people who have white avatars. They might not be white, but they have white avatars. And they were all making those comments. What did you think about the game? You probably caught a little bit of it.
Yeah, that here's how locked in I am on football. I was watching the XFL game all throughout the afternoon because it came on late because of pickleball. So I'm watching XFL, and I caught the third and fourth quarter of the game. And the two takeaways I had was, one, I'd want 45 from LSU on my team, and I want Clark on my team because she makes all the shots. And 45 looks like she's just aggressive on defense. She could dribble. She could take you off the dribble. She could shoot the mid-range. So I came away impressed with those two players. And to be completely fair and honest, I watched so much football. I just watched two quarters of women's college basketball all season, and it was just those two quarters. So I feel like I don't have enough in the bank to comment on you know, because I hadn't been following all season long because I'd be so locked into college football, NFL, then now with the XFL, and then putting together this draft guide and these draft and going to these all-star games. I literally only watched two quarters of women's college basketball. And it's not to say because it's women's sports, because I probably watched – here's what's funny. I'm grading the draft guide Saturday night or Friday night, it was. And I'm finally wrapping up a little bit of the guy, you know, clean up, tying up some loose ends. And I click on – no, Saturday night, because I was watching XFL in the background. And I click on – the San Diego State game for the last possession. So I saw the game winning shot, and that's as much college basketball, men's college basketball, I watched all season. So I have literally seen a quarter and a play of college basketball as a whole.
Okay, so yeah, I mean that makes sense though, right? And it must be difficult.
I would draft 45 from LSU. And Caitlin Clark, because she has ridiculous range. Yo, but 45 from LSU is legit.
Yo, I know that it may sound like I was bashing Clark, which I hope it doesn't come off that. I mean, I really don't care, but I hope it doesn't come off that way. But she is so disrespectful the way she be pulling up these threes on these chicks. Like,
and it was her passes too that really stood out too. Like, she could pass the ball as well.
Oh, like, no, she's great. I think whenever you're able to score the ball like that, you have to be able to pass the ball well, because you know you're going to get double teamed, right? You know you're going to draw a lot of attention. And so innately, I think, and that's why I always think it's hilarious when people used to talk about like scorers as if, oh, well, they don't get assists. And I'm like, yeah, but if you look at Kobe throughout his years, he shot a lot, but then he averaged like 5-6 assists a game. So like, what are we talking about here? AI the same way. I think sometimes the narratives on scorers get lost in their offensive game. She is phenomenal on the offensive side, but she is cheats. On the defensive side, they were looking for her. Like, yo, come on over here and play some defense. You ain't played no defense in that South Carolina game. Come on over here and play defense. Speaking of defense, I want to defend you in this respect. And once again, I get a chance to say it, you know, not face to face, but you know, screen to screen. Congratulations on dropping yet another one of the most comprehensive, not one of the most comprehensive draft guide that's out there now. I don't want to get into just the minutia of the draft guide itself. I want to get into your mindset 6-7 years ago when you started thinking to yourself, you know what, I think I'm going to want to do a draft guide soon. And what went into that thought process that you said, I'm not just going to give you the players that you know. I'm going to give you the players that you didn't even know you needed to know.
Yeah, it's because, and it's, I'm good. I'm glad you brought that up, because I just didn't decide in 2020 to start the draft guide. Like, I've been having conversations with folks, you guys, prior to that, like, man, I should do a draft guide. I want to do a draft guide. But didn't know, you know, we had already put out books, multiple books, so we knew the publishing process. It was just whether or not we wanted to do a physical draft guide or a digital,
or have it live on a digital space.
And so, you know, once figured out how it came about, and the good thing about the pandemic, you know, not to say, you know, there's bad things that happened, but the good part about it was it gave you time just to sit down and not go nowhere. So it was like, you know what, let me try this little draft guide thing. Let me try to put together a PDF file, because we did a PDF copy of the Stiff Arming Football Myths book. So we had familiarity with that. It was about trying to figure out the format. But then when you put together the guide, I was already doing on my YouTube channel, and I still get comments today, when I put out my draft grades. And my draft grades used to have all my rankings, you know, in terms of the prospects. So if I was already doing the work and keeping a physical copy handwritten by myself in these big, thick binders of scout reports, why not just, it would be easier to not only, you know, store instead of having these big, thick binders in your office, but it'd be easier to not only, hey, I just watched this film, let me input my notes digitally and then move on to the next one. So I'm doing less work in terms of writing, and I'll be able to track my notes, keep myself accountable more so than some of the notes I was taking when I was just handwriting stuff. And what a better way to do that than the, hey, you're at these games, you're at these all-star events. You'd be doing the whole process a disservice if I didn't, you know, evaluate or write up guys that I saw at the all-star game. You know, why am I going to all these games, getting practice clips and posting it on YouTube? And, you know, if I'm not putting together a scout reporter for the guy that played in the game or participated in the week, especially if he stood out. So that went into it. And plus, it's just a competitor in me. You always want to compete. People love former athletes and because in corporate, because they love to compete. Well, this is another example. I want to be the best. I want to be the best draft guide. I want to be the best draft analyst. I want to be known as, hey, I'm going to go to this guy because he gives you more for what you're asking for, or more than what you asked for. And that's the whole purpose behind making sure the guide is comprehensive. Now, the first guy, 2020, was a unique year. I think I had about maybe 560 prospects in it, which was still a lot, still more than everybody. And then the next year was the year everybody went back. So 2021's class wasn't as deep. It was probably like, it was maybe 600 or 650 or something like that. Then last year we crossed over that 1,000 number. And this year we crossed over that 1,000 number again. So now when people get a draft guide, and we know the draft is bigger than 7 rounds, we know the draft is about the priority free agents, the undrafted free agents, the rookie tryout guys, the guys that come and join the practice squad throughout the course of the season. So we know the rosters are transient. And so when I always like when you see it from beat writers, you see it from fans, you see it from analysts, when a guy gets signed to a roster, they treat it as no big deal. And if the guy goes off in preseason, they like to say, well, this guy came out of nowhere. Well, if you purchase the football game plan draft guide, you know there's probably a 95% chance there's a scouting report on this guy that just signed to your roster. And I want to be that source, because we were that source when we were talking way earlier in football game plan's iteration, you know, when we started diving to YouTube in 2009, that if somebody stood out and man, who's the small school? Well, you know, football game plan has probably talked about the small school guy, and you became the small school source. So we want to do the same thing with this draft guide. And I think we're doing a great job in only year 4 of the draft guide. So 2021, 22, and this year. So 4 years in, we've already outproduced so many draft guys that have come and gone. Some are still in existence. Some claim to be the biggest, but that's a lie, because we know we have the biggest in terms of most individual scouting reports out there. So that's a little bit of the backstory and the why behind the draft guide.
Yeah, I think one of the things I always notice is that anytime you decide to do anything or we decide to do anything, there's a lot of conversation that went into it. There's a lot of research that went into it. I knew. From the beginning, when you said, hey, thinking about doing a draft guide, we all were like, eh, at first. Because, and the reason everybody went, eh, is because, yo, what are you going to bring to the space that's not already there? The number one thing that we talked about when putting together a draft guide was, it can't just be about the same 20 to 25 guys. Your draft guide can't be a 10-page write-up on a 10-page write-up on each one of the top 10 guys in the draft. We all know they're going. Like, quite honestly, the draft guy telling people about CJ Stroud is useless. Draft guys telling us about dudes that are going to go within the first 30 minutes of the telecast, that's not where the juice is. What's going to happen on day two, when most of your draft nicks all of a sudden start to get a little when you ask them questions about guys that are being drafted? What's going to happen on day three when they're not even watching the draft anymore? The guys who are draft people, the guys who their jobs are to talk about and evaluate the draft, are no longer even watching the draft because they don't know who the hell this dude from Western Michigan is. They don't know who this dude from Eastern Washington is. They definitely don't know who that guy from Shepherd is. And so, like, when it became evident that you were going to not only create a draft guide, but then springboard and I believe double your efforts at these senior showcase games, where you weren't at just the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Bowl and the and the USA Army Bowl or whatever. You were at every bowl. Like bowl season, Emory Hunt, when you are bouncing from hotel room to hotel room all over the country, how often do you look around and go, who's doing the scouting for these other draft guys? Like, when you look around and it's just you and a bunch of like NFL scouts, but you don't see any of the people who drop draft guides out there, do you just sit back and go, where are they getting the information from?
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting it from my clips that I post on YouTube. But
absolutely.
In all seriousness, though, I do find myself, when I get to these all-star events, and it's always starting with the FCS Bowl in December. It's the first one out the gate, right? And so you get down there, you look around, it's just you and every NFL team. And so at first you used to feel a little weird, like, damn, I'm the only one here. But you go back into your mind of why you do what you do. Like, yo, this is not about you and your ego. This is about those dudes out there on the field wanting this opportunity to, showcase their talent in front of scouts. And what a cool thing for you to be a part of it, just to sit back and be able to capture these moments. Because, guys come up to you. I remember Jamel Demby came up to me at the combine when he was going through his draft process, walked up to me, introduced himself and said, hey, man, you're the czar of the playbook. I used to watch your stuff in high school, your videos on YouTube. And I was like, hey, that's, you do the math. You're like, that math checks out, right? He probably was in middle school when I started diving into YouTube in 2009. Then you get to the Shrine game last year and Samori Toure, I'm talking to him, interviewing him for, the YouTube channel. And he says, man, when they said, you're interviewing, I was like, oh, it's cool. That's a dude from YouTube. He posts all the highlights from all the All-Star games. Like, I used to always watch it because I wanted to prepare myself for the All-Star game and what they do at the All-Star games. And because of your channel, I used to watch and know what's coming up. And so it's cool to get that because that reminds you why you do what you do. But it was always fascinating to your question of, well, how are folks getting the information? And you wonder why you have all the information in terms of, I've seen this dude. Oh, I remember that name. Well, yeah, because you was there. And if you're not there and if you're not seeing which teams talk to which guy after practice or how many scouts from so-and-so team is at this particular event, and you wonder why 3 to 4 players from that event end up on that team, now it makes all the sense. Like, yeah, you kind of have to be there. There's no different than going to the Senior Bowl. And the stuff that you see around the Senior Bowl, you use during the draft and you use during preseason. Oh, yeah, I know why this guy ended up where he ended up because, this team was talking to him down in Mobile. And it's the same thing. Now, granted, I do know everyone's situation is different and everyone is not able. And so I want to put that out there. So that's one thing that I want to give that caveat. But I'm going to go out there because I can and I am able, God willing, that I'm going to go out there and go to all these events. And I wanted to make sure I make it to all of them because it just strengthens the credibility. Nothing strengthens credibility more than qualifications and practical experience and having, as I say, ASICs on the ground, right? Having that type of, experience is what truly ties the bond with you and the audience or the fan to be able to say, oh yeah, when I was at, oh, so yeah, you were there. So you have some firsthand knowledge, you have innate experience, intimate experience of what you're about to say. So that right there, it just to me, is all about building credibility in everything that we've done over the course of now 15 years of football game plan, you know, since 2007. And so everything is about, hey, I can't speak on this if I hadn't done it. I can't speak on this if I hadn't been there. I can't speak on this if I hadn't seen it. So I have no problem saying, I don't know. I hadn't watched him yet. I hadn't seen that yet. I still have to study that. And so me getting to all these All-Star games, and it's cool. I love how all the games kind of line up on the schedule. So you can really bounce from one game to one game each and every week. And I did that this year, finally got to all eight. I was going to do it last year, but COVID kind of killed the first 2 weeks of the scouting trip because I couldn't get to Texas, then to Florida. But this year, we were able to get to all eight All-Star game events, and it was cool to see because it helped put together one of the more comprehensive draft guys that's out there.
Yeah, I'm just gonna tell y'all what Emery is saying. I'm gonna be the Emery Hunt translator right now, because you know one thing that we know about Emery is he's gonna be humble in the moments when he really should be stunting on these dudes right now. What he's saying is, when you look at these other draft guides and you wonder why his evaluation is different than their evaluations, it's because they're all looking at the same information, because they all got the same information from the same source. That's why. If you really want to know why your draft guides look the same from all of your favorites, all the people that you love, that you respect, if you want to know why the mock drafts from all of the higher ups look the same, have similar looks. Now, one thing they've done on the mock drafts, if you haven't noticed, is they say wild, outlandish stuff early on because they know they have to do like four or five more mock drafts. But if you look at their what they consider to be their final mock draft, look at how all of a sudden almost everything aligns. And they'll tell you, oh, well, we got more information and blah, 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 blah. But what they're really saying is, we haven't watched anything. And the person that we got the information from that watched everything, this is how they see it. That's what's going on out there. And so when you look at Emery's draft guide, and if you haven't already, look in the comments on both the Facebook page, on both the Facebook feed and the YouTube feed, and go ahead and hit that link right now and bring up the draft guide. Go ahead and get that, you know what I'm saying? Purchase it right now. Get into it so that you can start talking about the people that nobody else around you will be talking about early on. So then it can seem like you were on it first. But we know Emery was on it first. And that's what's supposed to do. Like, Emery did that. So hopefully you don't have to go through that. Like, that's what we do. But he's really just out here telling y'all, like, yo, these dudes don't know what they're talking about. That's what he's saying. Yo, these dudes don't really know what they're talking about. They're just talking. And that's something, because I know even at the Senior Bowl and at the Shrine Bowl, you'll look around and you'll see people. Like, you'll see more people. But you see these people. I think it's the same when I hear stories about the Combine. I learned it firsthand. My first venture into Radio Row for the Super Bowl, there are some of these people who are going to these events just to hang out. They're not going to these events to really do work. At one point in time, I was sitting at the Super Bowl, and I was like, how does someone not just wake up, come here early in the morning, and then spend all day here and do content? Like, why? Because that's not what they're there for. They're there to have a good time. They're there to ball out. And I was like, but I can still do that. I can still do that. I can still go and ball out and have the events at night. But from the time I wake up in the morning until the time I shut it down, it's going to be content, content, content. And really trying to maximize this time. You see the same thing at the Senior Bowl, where the guys went out to the spot the night before, and now they don't show up until halfway through the second practice of the day. And you're like, oh, dang, what's up, man? How are you? Or, Oh, I'm sorry. We're not supposed to be saying names. Is that what? We're not. You know what? We're not gonna call any people out. We'll just say your favorite draft analyst. Their favorite draft analyst is Emory Hunt. If you ask anybody in a private moment who knows anything about this draft stuff and evaluating players, your favorite rapper is Emory Hunt. They'll all tell you. They won't say it out loud because then people are going to wonder where they got their information from. But we know it. And the reason that I know it is because I know what's being said in public and I know where the analysis came from. You know, it's happened to me, it's happened to Brandon, it's happened to Teron, and it's definitely happened to Emory on many occasions where he said something about a player in a conversation in a group of people and they were all taking notes. And then all of a sudden on their socials, you started to see the narrative about that person come out. When you see that, you know what time it is. In the industry, we talk about it all the time, is you almost have to start being more guarded on how you have conversations with people around you because intellectual property is ridiculously expensive these days. The moment that people were able to weaponize followers into money is the day that intellectual property became even more important than it is before. And so when you see all of a sudden 5 and 6 and 7 people tweeting the same stuff around the same time, you know they got some information from somewhere. And usually it's from Emory sitting down at a, you know, in the bleachers during the Senior Bowl, talking with a bunch of people within earshots, and then all of a sudden that conversation is on Twitter for everybody to hear. Shout out again to you. What's the one thing that you are, obviously the sheer number, the sheer size of this thing. When you send us, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, I've had the draft guide already. Like it's okay. I got the inside scoop. I know the author. So I had the draft guide, but when you send around the PD, when you send around the digital copy, and I hit the download button, because as soon as you send it, I hit the download button. I need to know, and I go right to the back pages. I want to know those people that we should all know that's going to end up on somebody's team somehow, that nobody's ever going to talk about except for you. Give me a couple of names that you know that are going to end up somehow, some way, they're going to end up on somebody's roster. And nobody's going to know about them. It's going to be found nowhere on a draft guide except in this draft guide.
Colton Dowell, the wide receiver out of UT Martin. Fantastic receiver, number one. You know, this is a guy that he graded out as my number 5 split in, so my number 5 X receiver. Big fan of his game, man. And this, again, when you're watching prospects, you tend to go to you know, the best matchup, especially if you're doing small school guys. You know, let me go find the FBS matchup, because that gives you kind of a 1-to-1, right? It's easy to watch the small school guy versus the small school guy be dominant. You know, or you want to find the best level of competition within their, you know, level of competition. So, for instance, if I'm watching, you know, the kid Jake Witt, the offensive lineman from Northern Michigan out of the GLIAC, I'm going to go watch them against Ferris State because they have Caleb Murphy, the fantastic defensive end, mm-hmm. That had 25 and a half sacks this past season. That's a matchup to watch. And, you know, he was at the Shrine game, so now you're getting a good 1-to-1. So for Colton Dowell out of UT Martin, I watched the Tennessee game. So I watched UT Martin versus Tennessee and, you know, in some other games, but you watched that game first. And he had those Tennessee defensive backs in cooking. Crisis mode.
Like, cooking. He like, was cooking them.
He was impressive all throughout the game. So he's one guy for me that really stood out. And I, again, you talk about guys that are on the radar, guys that, you know, were in some all-star games. He was at the College Gridiron Showcase. I go back down to the Tropical Bowl. Was a big fan of, you know, the fact that you got to see a lot of these small school guys compete against FBS competition. And Connor Degenhart, I keep bringing his name up, the quarterback from New Haven, another guy that he fits the profile of what people used to like at quarterback. He's 6'5", 227. He played at Holy Cross, transferred to New Haven, high-level D2 conference in the Northeast 10. They played some really good games. So mm-hmm. you watch him throw the football, and you saw improvement from Holy Cross to, you know, to New Haven. You saw him just do things well. It's almost like I followed him throughout the whole All-Star game process, because he was at the FCS Bowl. Then he was at the College Gridiron Showcase. Then he was at the Tropical Bowl. So you see him play well at these events where he's playing against FBS competition, and he's checking all these boxes. And another offensive guy, Fotis Kokosulis. You know, sometimes you find guys, while you, and that's why I love, I feel like I do a 360-degree view of scouting, because I'm an analyst in terms of covering the NFL and college football during the season on CBS Sports. I also am a color analyst calling high school games, calling college football games, and then I jump into the scouting mode in January when I go to these All-Star games. So Fotis Kokosulis was someone that I watched when I was calling the game at Monmouth. And I'm like, this receiver is just on fire. I think he had like 15 catches for 330-something yards that day and 4 touchdowns. The game went back and forth. I think it was a 6 or 7 overtime game that I called. So I love being on those games. I love that I am on those games locally, because I don't have to, if it happened down in D.C. with Georgetown or Baltimore with Morgan State, I know I have a long 3-hour drive back home, and I kind of want this game to be over with, right? But when it's like in Monmouth, I'm like, oh, that's just a hop, skip, and a jump. Yeah, this game go to 8 overtimes if it has to. But watching him just do a great job winning deep down the field, winning short, had a huge kickoff return to set up the score to help them win the game or get into overtime. And watching, and the thing I hate, I'll be glad when we get back to normal in terms of, you know, the eligibility, you know, when guys are seniors, they're seniors, you know, because right now we're dealing with the COVID plus years. So I had to reach out to him to say, hey man, are you going back to Fordham? Or are you declaring for the draft? Cause again, you would think this guy would have been in an All-Star game. Now, for whatever reason, he wasn't in some sort of All-Star game. So I had to make sure he wasn't going back to school, because I didn't want to leave him out the draft guy, because I spent like 2 weeks talking solely about him because he had back-to-back weeks. So I went and watched I called the Fordham game, the Monmouth game. Then I went and watched the Ohio game, the Ohio Bobcats. He was baking Ohio. So this is someone that also stood out, though. Yeah, he may not have run a 4.3. He may not have, you know, jumped out the gym. But you talk about playing football, that's the type of guy I want on my team. And lastly, we're talking about we talked quarterback, talked running back. One guy that I've found that I think is going to find his way on the roster, and I've talked about him throughout the whole process too. It may not be the best year. I thought last year was the best year for HBCU talent, draftable talent. This mm-hmm. year, the numbers may not be as vast, but Keenan Isaac of Alabama State made himself a lot of money. You go back and watch the game he played against Auburn. He stood out there. Isaiah Bolden, the corner from Jackson State, had a fantastic NFLPA game where he played primarily on the outside as a corner and more than held his own. He's 6'2", 205. Kenny Isaac is 6'2", 188. Both are long corners. Bolden is a little bit more athletic. And, you know, he's someone that again, he ran a 4.3 at his pro day. And I'm pulling up this other defensive line that I'm going to touch on as well. But he you know, Bolden jumped high, ran well. That's what he does. And he also
Bolden
as a returner.
Bolden, Bolden is a guy that I always thought was going to find his way to the NFL. He's been a supreme talent ever since high school. When he was out there in Tampa. The thing that I like, obviously, the return game is always a plus, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem with returners nowadays is that the kicking game is set up to not really allow people to return kicks. It's one of the things that I don't like about the changes in the NFL is you're eliminating an offensive, weapon in the return game by the way in which you're allowing people to kick now. But the thing that I always liked about Bolden is that when you cross track speed, when you cross that track speed, that track athleticism, that track explosiveness, and then you saw a jump when he went to Jackson State in his technique. When he was at Florida State, he was kind of haphazard. It's why he couldn't get on the field. And then he goes to Jackson State, and it's not like he went to a lower level and he was able to get on the field because he was at a lower level, because Jackson State, when it comes to skill position guys, they have NFL caliber guys with Coach Prime there. He got on the field because he really became a sponge of the game and started really learning the particular minutia of playing a position. You and I both know at the NFL level, when you're playing cornerback, all it takes is for you to be off this much and you are cooked. Like, these wide receivers don't play no games with it. The hardest, I still contend cornerback's the hardest position to play in football. I know people will say it's quarterback, but at corner, you literally don't know what's going on until it's going on. You have to make real-time decisions, real-time adjustments, very, very similarly to what quarterbacks do, except for with quarterbacks, you don't get the luxury of pre-snap reads. You don't get the luxury of knowing what you're going to do if this happens perfectly the first time. Everything is reactionary. And so I think that's where Bolden really had his stock raised over these last couple of years.
And the last dude I bring up is Darryl Middleton. Who came out of Bethel, mm-hmm. which is in Tennessee. It's an NAIA program that has two Bethels, right? Yep. There's the Bethel University Royals, and there's the Bethel, I think, University Wildcats. So this is the Wildcats I'm talking about. They were purple and yellow.
Purple and yellow.
But Darryl Middleton, now, full disclosure, he is someone that played at Tennessee. So he's an SEC Power 5 defensive lineman. So you already know his NAIA film is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So you got to go back and watch him at Tennessee. And when you watch him at Tennessee, you like, man, this dude is, he's 6'5", 300, 6'6", 308, because he was at the Hula Bowl. So he's able to play across the front, and I'm not saying he's Reggie White, but I'm saying how big Reggie White was playing on the end. You could see him playing on the end. Although I can have him great as a defensive tackle, he's my number three defensive tackle because he's so good with his hands. He's ridiculously strong. He has the length, and I compared him to Eric Swan. If you remember, Eric Swan back in the day was with the Cardinals, was a first-round pick, did not play college ball. He played semi-pro ball. So imagine mm-hmm. going from semi-pro. Now, granted, there's some other issues to why he ended up having to go play semi-pro, but on the surface, taking somebody in the first round, top 15 pick that came from semi-pro ball to be a productive double-digit year player in the NFL, Middleton has that same type of cachet that could find himself maybe going day two, early day three, coming from an NAIA program that people would say, man, where is Bethel? I inherited him. But if you go back and watch him at Tennessee, he was dominant then. Got off track a little bit, had to go to a JUCO, then found his way at West Virginia, then Tennessee as well. But this is someone, he committed to Jackson State, but then decided not to go in 2021 or 2022 and ended up at Bethel. So he was going to go play for Coach Prime, and then he pulled back and went ahead and went to Bethel. And Middleton is someone that I'm telling you, when you watch his film, you could watch his NAIA film for giggles, S's and giggles. just how dominant he was out there, like almost like how Andrew Rupchik of Culver Stockton's tape was. He's now with the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. This is someone that just legitimate, and I put in my notes in last year's draft guide that Rupchik was the best NAIA offensive line prospect I had ever seen. And I didn't see all of them, but I just saw his tape, and it was just like, clearly this is what you want to see when someone is playing at a lower level of competition. You want to see somebody just elite dominance.
His dominance, yeah.
That's what Middleton was doing at Bethel, so that's why you have to go back and watch him at Tennessee. But he's another one that I think when people be like, wow. And I want to say this, because this is another reason why you have so many players in this draft guide. All right, why I put together so many players. Because I could solely focus on the combine list and the Senior Shrine Bowl rosters, right? And you know, that'll give you about a good 500 or so players, right? Which is enough. Which can give you that you know, that hey, these are the guys that the NFL is focused on. But the reason why you do so much is because you have, you know, these other leagues, XFL, USFL, the European League of Football, which I've grown to become a big fan of now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the LFA.
LFA.
Down in Mexico. So guys are getting opportunities to play pro ball. And also the indoor leagues, obviously. But it's cool to have scouting reports on guys that are playing in this league, because it helps you become a more knowledgeable fan, a more knowledgeable analyst. And, you know, if these guys that have purchased a guide or they check the guide out or whatnot, and even if they don't play a down of pro ball at any level, it's still cool to have an evaluation of what you were able to do in college. Whether, you know, you're the number one quarterback or the number 85 quarterback, the fact that somebody took the time out to evaluate your film and give you a report, you know, that's something you can keep. I always tell players at training camp, whether it's the rookie, you know, mini camp, we have 90 guys on the roster and 85 guys are on tryout basis. So they may not make it past the weekend. Hey man, you put on an NFL helmet.
You were there.
You're an NFL player in my eyes. So you get a scout report, you was a prospect in my eyes. So
They deserve it. Like that, I think that's the one thing that I always go back to when I look at your draft guide. It's like these young men have dedicated their lives. They are bachelor degree to master degree level football players. That is how much time they've dedicated their lives to doing this. The recognition should be there. They should have recognition. I'm with you. When the super duper year is over with, I think we have another one, maybe 2 years of the cycle before we push out all of the super duper seniors. I'll be happy. I think it'll be great for high school players. I think it'll be great for college players who want to get real legitimate, like, where am I in comparison to my peers and not in comparison to this 26-year-old that's been in college for 7 years at five different places. You know, like, no disrespect to them, but, like, move on, man. Get your ass a job. Like, go do something else. Like, unless you're getting money, you out here, like, banging up against these dudes, these 18 and 19-year-olds, man, and you 25 years old, man. Let's go. It's time to go. And, but I really think that it says a lot to be able to, for them to be accounted. You know what I'm saying? Like, having them be accounted for and know that when that young man gets the chance, somebody's going to say, oh, nobody saw this coming. That's not true. Emory Hunt saw it coming. Emory Hunt saw it coming. Emory Hunt thought enough of you to do an evaluation of you. I know you've been reached out to by parents, by aunties and them, by former coaches, by players who are all like, hey, you know, thank you for featuring me in a video. Thank you for featuring me in an article. Thank you for featuring me in the draft guide. I want to say thank you on behalf of the culture. If you look around, there are not a lot of us in this space doing it at a level that makes other people jealous to where they want to steal stuff out your guy. See, low key, y'all don't even know, like, Emery Hunt could have dropped this, like, you know, a month ago. But if he did, then a bunch of the people that you see in his guide would be in a lot of other people's guides. Because we saw that on some previous years as well when he was giving you the crack early. So now he had to make you wait for the crack so you can get it. And now you get a chance to consume it these last few weeks before we get into the actual NFL draft. But really, his draft guide is built to be something that you look at after the draft. It's not really just for the draft. It's a tool to help you be able to, when your NFL team brings those 80 rookies in for that rookie mini camp, you're going to open up the football game plan draft guide and you're going to learn about all 80 of those guys that they brought in to have to work out. You're like, oh, there's a chance this kid could end up on our team. They're going to be in that draft guide. They're not going to be in whatever draft guide you're probably buying in company with it. And so the real jewel of this draft guide comes into play once the draft has happened. If you know anything about me too, you know that when I drop my mock draft for Giants Country, when I do any of my mock drafts, I go directly off the football game plan draft guide. That is how I decide where my players are going to be drafted. That is my big board. That is how I get all my information. So if you're wondering where I got what I have from, you'll always hear me refer back to, hey, you know, the football game plan draft guide. That is what we as a crew use in order to know where our guys should be ranked, where we should be taking them in what round. And then more importantly, like I said, for you, the consumer, after the draft, for you to be able to learn more about these young men that are going to be joining your team, that you can't get from Mel Kiper or from Todd McShay or even from CBS Sports, even though Emery does great work for them. The people who are over there, they're not digging this deep. And so it's a fantastic work of art. Once again, congratulations to you, Emery, on another job well done. And I know already you're going to say it, and I don't even like it when you say it, but you're already on 2024. You're already on 2024. You're already thinking about it. Before I get you out of here, you know I can't get you out without talking about some tight ends. Tucker Kraft, South Dakota State. In my opinion, I think he is a step better as a blocker than name just jumped out of my head. It'll come right back. Eagles tight end from San Diego State. Yeah, I think he's just a tad bit better as a blocker than Dallas Goedert was when Dallas Goedert came out of South Dakota State. Is he as good a receiver?
That's the difference. That's what made Goddard such a good prospect. You know, he was such a good receiver, such an athletic guy at the position that you kind of, hey, we could work with the blocking. As long as you got the want to and heart, we could work with the blocking. We could, you know, smooth out your technique. You become good at it. But you can't fake athleticism. You can't create, you know, talent and create football players like a lot of people like to think. So Kraft to me is a better, you're right, he's a tad bit better blocker. I think he's more of your stable inline guy. So he's a different option, in my opinion, than Goddard is.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because the two tight ends for South Dakota State, because Kraft was injured a lot this year, Hines is the better blocking tight end. He's actually coming back to school. But to think that I thought Kraft was a decent blocker and Hines is an even better blocker, I think Kraft's have some movability on with him, but he's not Dallas Goedert. I want people to understand this. Like, they're going to try to tell you he's Dallas Goedert. He's not Dallas Goedert as a receiver. So don't look at him as a bust or as a failure if he ends up just being
a Daniel Bellinger. Like, you know, yeah, if he ends up being like that, a solid, you know, inline guy. Tell people, go watch the game against Iowa. That gives you a good, you know, idea, because he's matched up against a very good defensive line. And so that way you get to see what we're talking about in terms of him being a very good blocker.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Emery, thank you again. Tell everybody. I know the link's in the chat. The link's in the video on the bottom. So make sure you go and click that link. But also just tell everybody else what you got coming down the pipe and how awesome you've been at predicting all of these football line spreads in the XFL.
Oh yeah, that is true. I've been doing like that stuff, man. I'm 19 and 9 this season.
Ridiculous.
So that's pretty good, considering people say, hey, you don't, no one knows about the XFL rosters or whatnot. But that's why you get the draft guy. So
that's why you get the draft guy.
You know what I'm saying? This is not like, I'm glad you brought up, it's not just for the draft. This is something that comes in play year round, because we know how people just pop up on teams throughout the season. And if you're a fan of football and you're watching the USFL, XFL, a lot of these guys are going to end up being guys on those rosters. So if you have the draft guide from 2020, 2021, 2022, you're going to know a lot of these guys, so you can be able to follow the game a lot better. But you can pick it up at footballgameplan.com/2023draft guide. Follow my work on CBS Sports HQ. And I have to say this, a lot of my colleagues at CBS Sports, they do a great job doing what they do on the top. Where I come in at is I help fill the gaps out. So therefore, we give you a well-rounded draft, almost like a 360 look. You know what I'm saying? Like, as you get closer to, because if you look at a lot of outlets, you know, it's top heavy and no one does the bottom. Well, CBS has someone that does the bottom and kind of fills up that ice cream cone. So you get a full ice cream top to bottom. And also follow me on Sportsline. We get those amazing against the spread picks on the XFL and the USFL, which comes into play April 15th, I think tax day, or day before, day after tax day. So yeah, we are all over footballgameplan.com/2023draft guide, Sportsline, CBS Sports HQ. Follow along, youtube.com/footballgameplan. Smash that subscribe button. You know, again, we're going to get more active with the YouTube again. People are always asking when you put your draft guide, your draft great prospect rankings on YouTube. That won't happen again, because we have a draft guide now.
Because you have a draft guide, right?
The draft guide now, so you can get it there. But we'll do other
draft grades
on YouTube, player interviews, you know, podcasts. You never know. There's always something in the works. And then when you see it, you think it just popped off, but it's been in the process for years.
Absolutely. Well, I'm the best in the business. The czar of the playbook, the czar of the draft guy, Mr. Day 3, Emery Hunt, the first ever guest on Talk Spicy. That's why we're on here for an hour. Fire as usual. Always great conversation. Always great content. Emery, I really do appreciate your time, man. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Talk Spicy. I'm Coach Gene Clemens. Do this thing a few times a week. Rate the show, comment, agree, disagree, but whatever you do, keep it spicy. 5-star ratings are appreciated. If you're joining me on the YouTube channel, make sure that you like, make sure you subscribe. Until next time, peace.